Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And thanks to Bridget Bergen for filling in yesterday while I was off for Yom Kippur, atoning for my sins for the past year. Really, it would take me days or weeks to atone for all those sins. But they only give you one day, so it is what it is. On this morning's show, New York Times White House correspondent Maggie Haberman will talk about her latest reporting on Donald Trump telling his lawyer to tell the National Archives that he had returned all the government documents he had taken from the White House when he really hadn't, another potential legal problem for Trump. But we'll talk mostly about Maggie's new book, Confidence Man, about Donald Trump, that turns out to be quite the history book about New York City in the 80s. So we will take a trip back to the Ed Koch, Al Sharpton, Donald Trump, Tom Wolf, George Steinbrenner, Ronald Reagan as president, Rudy Giuliani as U.S. attorney era in this city. I look forward to a kind of tragic comic New York history romp with Maggie Haberman, who explains how the New York politics of then contributed to the threat to democracy nationally today. And Maggie did report for the Daily News and New York Post and had a tabloid's eye view of the world before she joined the Times. So she brings that experience, among other things, to the conversation that's coming up. Also today, a call in for young adults who live with your grandparents and grandparents who live with your young adult grandkids. A more common trend recently, it's being reported. Anyone out there doing that now? We'll take your calls later. We begin today with our midterm election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 9, Climate as an Issue in the New York State Governor's Race. Now, this actually broke out as a story on our show this summer after I heard Republican candidate Lee Zeldin say one of his tools to fight inflation would be to restore fracking for natural gas to New York State. Some of you remember Governor Cuomo had banned fracking back in 2014 for climate reasons and also because of local air and water pollution risks. Zeldin is running on bringing it back to create jobs in parts of upstate, mostly the so-called southern tier of New York State along the border with Pennsylvania. And also, he says, to eventually bring down energy prices because more fracking means more supply. When I asked Governor Hochul about that when she was here for a campaign interview in August, this is how she replied.
That idea is dead on arrival. No way are we going to go backwards to our commitment to protect the environment. And this just is another example of how Lee Zeldin is, number one, out of touch with New York values, but also how extreme and dangerous it would be to have someone who is willing to just turn back all the progress we've made to protect our planet and protect the people of our state going forward.
Governor Hochul on the show in August. Well, word got out about that answer, and Zeldin was invited to respond on a Fox Business News interview, and he said this.
One of the things that we should be doing is reversing New York's ban on the safe extraction of natural gas. The southern tier of New York and for some other counties that sit on the Marcellus and Utica shales, they want to be able to tap into this resource. You can create jobs and generate revenue. You can revitalize these communities. You can be exporting energy to other states. You can be exporting energy to other countries. But in New York, they banned it. And you can reduce energy costs for New Yorkers who need that relief, but you help the entire region. You can help the entire country with that effort. In New York, you have these applications for new pipelines to be constructed that are being delayed and denied up in Albany that instead should be getting approved.
So fracking is an issue in the governor's race, a clear-cut difference between the two candidates. We'll talk about that and more on their climate positions and histories now with Ben Max, editor-in-chief of the Gotham Gazette and host of the Max Politics podcast. Thanks for coming on, Ben. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be with you.
I think it's worth reminding people of what fracking is. We say the word a lot, but a lot of people just don't know what that means. As described in brief by the New York Times, it involves injecting large amounts of water, sand, and chemicals deep underground at high pressures to release oil and natural gas from rock formations, that from the Times. And it's controversial because of instances of local water pollution, mostly water pollution in some areas. And, of course, climate activists don't want anything that contributes more fossil fuels to the environment. But it could provide jobs, and some communities along the southern tier want it. So in the governor's race, the difference is pretty clear. Zeldin is for a resumption of fracking in New York State. Hochul is not. Is Zeldin right, at least that it would create jobs, as far as you can tell?
Oh, sure. I think that's probably a safe bet that it would be an economic boost to certain communities, especially some of the more economically depressed communities that, you know, are in the southern tier and that are certainly part of Zeldin's base already.
And he talks about fracking, safe extraction of natural gas. There's a debate in energy mining circles as to whether there can be such a thing as safe fracking in terms of the local air pollution and water pollution problems that it has caused in some contexts, in some areas, in addition to the longer-term climate impact. You know, when I asked Democrats, Ben, if communities shouldn't be able to make their own decisions on this, Democrats say no, the larger goals are more important, especially climate goals. But there was a movement after the Cuomo fracking ban took effect of some landowners and town officials up in the southern tier to say they would consider seceding from New York State and actually joining Pennsylvania, changing the map, which they border on and which does allow fracking on its side of the border. I guess that never went anywhere. I don't even know if they could do it under the Constitution, change state lines. But do you think it's a powerful issue up there, or do the dangers of fracking for the local environment make it not actually that appealing as a political centerpiece?
Well, I think you'd have to get, you know, more of a sense from certain local communities. I do think that in most areas that lean more conservative politically generally, it's probably a more, you know, it's a more popular campaign plank and talking point. I do think it's the type of thing that resonates somewhat with, you know, some more conservative Democrats and some independents. But I do think the larger issues of clean drinking water, a safe environment, clean air, moving to more renewable energy, for the most part, are issues that a lot of the sort of moderate Democrats and independents that a Republican in New York at least needs to win in an election, to win over. Those issues, I think most, you know, voters that are sort of any type of swing voters are probably not, you know, putting allowing fracking in New York as at the top of their wish list. You know, I think there's a lot of climate action that's in movement in New York that mostly are popular items, and people have become more and more accustomed to just sort of understanding and believing that, you know, the climate crisis is real and there's a real need to be moving towards more renewable energy, and New York's contribution to the larger issue of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and these questions about what the, you know, local and larger impacts of fracking would have. But I also think one thing that Zeldin's doing, as you noted, is talking about fracking related to the economy, which we know is basically the top issue for voters in this election, and also related to energy bills and people's cost of living and inflation. So we know that those types of arguments are probably hitting home for a lot of voters. I just don't know that I see, other than in certain areas that would get the real boost from allowing fracking for economic activity, that necessarily this is a big issue for voters to go towards Zeldin's argument in this race.
And listeners, we welcome your calls here on 30 Issues in 30 Days, our midterm election series, Issue 9, climate as an issue in the New York State governor's race. Anybody listening in the southern tier towns right now, do you care about this? Do you want fracking? Do you want the right to make a town based decision on fracking or anyone else on any aspect of climate as an issue in the New York State governor's race. We're going to move beyond fracking now and talk about other aspects of climate as an issue. So any of that is fair game for a comment or a question for Ben Max from Gotham Gazette, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. So, Ben, as you know, there are other climate things that Hochul is running on. We'll get to them in a minute. But your team reported in Gotham Gazette that you've been having difficulty finding or getting direct responses at all from Zeldin on climate policies. Here's a quote, folks, from Ben's Gotham Gazette about Zeldin. It says, he has not provided plans to address the state's affordable housing crisis, healthcare system, public universities, mass transit, climate and resiliency, and more. That trend continued as the campaign declined to respond to several requests from Gotham Gazette inquiring into Zeldin's policies and positions on those issues. So Ben, does Zeldin's campaign include simply stating no public positions one way or another on major issues like climate and affordable housing?
He has weighed in on a few specifics under those categories here and there on the campaign trail, maybe at a primary debate with his GOP opponents, but he's offering a very, very limited policy agenda. If you look at his campaign website, you can see it's very skeletal. There's no page for environment or climate. There's also no page for a variety of other issues. We've asked many times for just share with us some of his ideas on how to address the, you know, the city and state's housing crisis and other issues you just mentioned. We've gotten no responses. I did another round of outreach ahead of this interview to say, hey, we're looking at the candidates on climate and environment. Anything you want to send over? And I sent over a specific list of questions and pinged his campaign spokesperson a second time, and they've responded to me before on other things. So there was nothing forthcoming again on climate and environmental issues. So this is definitely one area where he's being very quiet, other than the few things that he's put out, which is he wants to allow fracking in the state. He wants, he doesn't want the governor, I believe, to sign the cryptocurrency mining moratorium. You know, a few specifics that he's put out there, and he's touted himself as something of an environmentalist in the past. He's similar to, I would say, a number of Republicans who represent areas like Long Island, where there's obviously a lot of coastline and there's a lot of environmental issues that they have some semblance of efforts to ensure some conservation. They focus on the cleanliness of some of the shoreline and things of that nature. But in terms of larger issues related to greenhouse gas emissions and renewable energies, you know, there's not a lot of policy there.
Does Zeldin, and by the way, thanks for reaching out to his campaign on behalf of this segment right now. I guess we owe you at least a stringer fee or lunch or something.
Well, we're writing more about it, so not it's for our work as well.
Great.
I want to be able to share with people where the two gubernatorial candidates stand on these issues. And it's frustrating when a major candidate for governor doesn't want to share stances on certain things. I tried to ask, I'm sure you're going to get to this shortly, I tried to ask the Zeldin campaign again, does he want voters to support or not support the Environmental Bond Act that's on the general election ballot? And no answer on that either.
So, yeah, we will talk about that Bond Act more explicitly coming up. Does Zeldin deny human-caused climate change, like say it's a hoax, as some Republicans do, or does he have alternative plans here on the 10th anniversary month of Hurricane Sandy, coastal resiliency plans to adapt to rising sea levels in his community in Suffolk County that he'd argue are better than Hochul's or anything like that?
Well, he is supportive of some resiliency measures. That goes back to sort of the differentiation I was trying to draw there about especially some Republicans who represent areas like communities on Long Island that are so susceptible to rising sea levels and extreme weather. And so he has supported some efforts on those types of projects. I don't think he's called climate change a hoax, but he has certainly cast aspersions on a lot of the Democrat-led efforts to push, you know, for example, he's called it, you know, a far-left climate agenda for Democrats to push a ban on gas hookups and new construction starting several years from now. That's something that New York City passed. The governor looked to pass it in this year's State of the State agenda that she had in her budget. It didn't quite get there because of opposition in the state assembly, but it is something that seems to be on the top of Governor Hochul's agenda for further climate action if she wins this election. It's the type of thing that Lee Zeldin has opposed. He's also opposed some of the projects and the laws that Hochul and others have announced related to moving to more electric vehicles and banning fossil fuel vehicles, about the sale of fossil fuel vehicles about 10 years from now in New York. So he's not quite called it a hoax as far as I know, but he's certainly opposed to a lot of the more aggressive actions that Democrats are pursuing.
We've got some callers coming in from the Southern Tier or with connections to the Southern Tier. Robert in Elmira, I see you. You'll be the second caller. First, Sharon in Manhattan, who has family in the Southern Tier. Hi, Sharon. You're on WNYC.
Hello, Brian. I'll try to make this quick because I think you may have a lot of people with personal anecdotes. My mother-in-law was offered $1,500 to allow fracking on her property, which was an acre or an acre and a half, basically a house with a large backyard, and she declined it.
Well, first of all, $1,500, that's like 25 cents.
Right. Well, $1,500, and if she signed that they could drill, that was all that they were offered. This was more than 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
This tiny sum. Her husband actually wanted to do it because it was free money, but she declined it, and it really didn't matter because one of her neighbors who allowed the fracking, and I stood in her yard and saw, you know, you look sideways, there's this small rig that looks like an oil rig, but small. In her neighbor's yard, and their water was polluted.
Do you know any details of that? Like what happened to the water? I know some of the extreme examples that have made the news from places is that some water has even caught on fire, which is almost impossible when you think about water. But apparently that has happened in at least one instance or a few instances from fracking. So do you know in the case of your in-law's neighbor, what happened to their water, or maybe you don't know.
It wasn't just my in-law's neighbor. That's the point that I'm trying to make, that when one person allows fracking on their property, it can contaminate
yes.
everyone's water.
Right.
So her water, the company, and I don't know the name of the company, but they never admitted culpability, but they did provide bottled water for some period of time. She had already, very fortunately for her, closed on selling the house, and she was very concerned, of course, that her buyer would renege. They did not or were not able to, and so she's not still in that house. But the last thing that our family knew was that the family that purchased it had to use bottled water for everything, and they didn't even have the fracking on their property.
Sharon, thank you so much for that anecdote, and there's an example, side effects of fracking in actual people's lives. Now we'll go to Robert in Elmira. Robert, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Enjoy your show. Listen to it every day. Longtime NWC supporter.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I live in Elmira, New York. I'm an architect, but we also have I've also had opportunity to drive into Mansfield, Pennsylvania, which is right across the border. This whole thing with fracking is just pure craziness. It's not only, as your previous caller mentioned, damaging the environment. It's just an unhealthy way of trying to establish an energy program in this country. And I apologize for being so nervous here, but there are other alternatives, and I would like your guests to explore them. I'll take my call off the air.
Robert, let me ask you, since you're up in that area, is there talk, I mean, your position is clear, but is there talk among your neighbors or town officials, as far as you know, about jobs? I know these are very economically depressed communities, many of them. in the southern tier section of New York State. Do people talk about it in those terms that you know of?
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And to some degree, when the fracking thing was really doing well in Pennsylvania a couple of years ago, that was that you wanted those jobs. I mean, that's what you wanted. You wanted to be a rigger. You wanted to drive truck. You wanted to, you know, work on all that stuff. But, you know, we don't know the health benefits of or just things that have happened to those workers. It's going to take a while to figure that out. We do know that being around that stuff is carcinogen. And they look at it as being, you know, hey, we're going to turn ourselves around. Well, I really dispute that. I really disagree with that.
Robert, thank you very much. We're going to continue in a minute with Ben Max from Gotham Gazette and more on 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 9, Climate as an Issue in the New York State Governor's Race. We've heard some first-person stories from up in the Southern Tier area about gubernatorial candidate Lee Zeldin running on restoring fracking to New York State. Governor Cuomo banned it in 2014. We're going to move on to other climate issues in this race right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we are in our 30 Issues in 30 Days election series, Issue 9, Climate as an Issue in the New York State Governor's Race. I guess you could also call this our Climate Story of the Week, which we do weekly on the show, but we're doing three climate segments this week, so take your pick. Eeny, meeny, miny. Okay, this one, Climate as an Issue in the New York State Governor's Race on our 30 Issues series and our Climate Story of the Week with Ben Max, executive editor of Gotham Gazette and host of the Max Politics podcast. Here's another climate issue as we move on from fracking, where an environmentalist called into that show in August when Hochul was on and pressed her on a climate issue that she hadn't taken a position on yet. It's Eric from Manhattan, who identifies himself as climate activist Eric Weltman. He praises Hochul for one of her actions regarding Bitcoin mining, and then...
The next step you can take right now, is sign the bill passed by the legislature in June, putting a two-year pause on similar kinds of fossil fuel-powered crypto mining that promotes fracking and that increases greenhouse gas emissions,
all right,
putting at risk a possibility of meeting our climate goals. Governor Hochul.
Eric, I'm gonna leave it. So that was the end of a longer call. Just so you could hear the question we're going to focus on. Do you happen to know, Ben, if Hochul signed that crypto mining moratorium? She did deny the permit for one particular company. That's what he was thanking her for, that was involved in crypto mining. I said Bitcoin mining, but it's any kind of crypto. But she still, you know, does not have had to have signed that bill by now, even though it was passed in the spring. Do you happen to know if she did?
Oh, I know that she has not. And this is one of the interesting places where, you know, there's some frustration with the governor from her left. You know, she has not, you know, done everything that climate activists and some progressive legislators and her progressive opponent, you know, Jomani Williams in the Democratic primary wanted her to do, including signing this bill. I'm sensing at this point that it's not something she's going to take action on before Election Day. I think there, you know, are questions as to how many different ways she might want to be open to attacks from Zeldin and moderates on and conservatives on the question of if she's taking, you know, job killing and industry killing measures, so to speak. And I think she's probably thinks she's done enough on climate, which she's done a tremendous amount. And many people think, you know, a little bit too far in some ways, like Zeldin, that she's done enough to have support. She has a lot of support, obviously, from liberals and Democrats and environmentalists in many ways. She has the endorsement of the New York League of Conservation Voters. So she hasn't taken action on that bill yet. She might do it in the lead up to Election Day if she thinks it would give her a good boost, you know, among some Democratic voters and maybe some independents, but she hasn't taken action on it yet.
Well, I'm going to take a call from somebody who thinks she hasn't gone far enough on climate in general. It's Justice in Manhattan, who is supporting the Green Party candidate for governor, Howie Hawkins. Justice, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, Brian. Thank you. Hi, Ben. Well, November 8th, write in vote, Howie Hawkins for governor, Gloria Matera for lieutenant governor, Green Party, Green New Deal for 100% clean energy, and then the real Green New Deal that they've campaigned on since 2010. 100% clean energy and zero emissions in 10 years, public power utilities to build 100% clean energy, public banks and tax the rich to fund the Green New Deal.
And you think this is more than Hochul is talking about, because she is talking about a fossil fuel phase out in New York. She is talking about no more gasoline-powered car sales, new car sales after 2035. Do you think there's a lot of daylight between Hawkins and Hochul at this point, Justice?
Oh, a whole universe of it. It's real 100% clean energy and zero emissions in 10 years. Public power utilities to build 100% clean energy. Public banks and tax the rich to fund the Green New Deal.
Justice, thank you for your call. We really appreciate it. And Ben, just as sort of a New York State politics footnote to Justice's call, she did say write in Howie Hawkins, the Green Party candidate for governor, as part of the changes that Cuomo enacted to make it harder for smaller parties to get on the ballot at all. I guess there's no Green Party line this year, huh?
No, they lost the line previously, as did other smaller parties. There's only four parties that have the ballot line, the two major ones and the Working Families and the Conservative parties, and those of each doubled up here in fusion voting with Hochul and Zeldin. So there'll only be two candidate names on the ballot. But there are a couple of write-in campaigns going, including for Howie Hawkins, who's run for governor several times before and is the original voice in New York calling for a Green New Deal. That is correct. And they have a more aggressive approach to it than is being enacted. Obviously, there's lots of questions about implementation and all that. But yes, that's true.
So that's part of the Cuomo legacy, right? Even if not a lot of people are going to vote for the minor party candidates, he didn't even want them on the ballot, as many of them as there were before. And he managed to get rules that made it much harder for them to get on the ballot. And the loss of the Green Party as an option or officially in the debate, let's say, by having a ballot line and having to rely on a write-in campaign, that's part of the Cuomo legacy.
That's right. And this was an effort targeted, of course, at the Working Families Party. They were unsuccessful in knocking the WFP off its, you know, continuing to have its ballot line. But now under these new rules, all of the parties continue to need to earn it every 2 years in the gubernatorial and presidential elections. So this is a constant battle now for the smaller parties to try to either regain a ballot line or keep the ballot line they have. In some ways, I think Cuomo would be happy to have a number of smaller parties on the ballot if he were still running, but not the Working Families Party, which was mostly intended to target.
Now, as part of Governor Hochul's answer to Eric, the caller we played on crypto mining, Hochul raised another climate issue that you referred to before, that all New Yorkers who vote will have a say on in November. Here's the governor on this show in August again.
I'm going to ask Eric and others and all your listeners, Brian, if you can help us do something that is going to be profoundly important for the protection of our environment and building resiliency, and that is support for our $4.2 billion bond act, which is on the ballot this November. It's our clean water, clean air, green jobs environmental bond act. And when we get that money, that coupled with our $500 million we're putting in offshore wind and the first electrified school bus system and our money for the Environmental Protection Fund.
So, Ben, have you reported on this yet? I want to assure our listeners we're going to do a separate segment solely on this before Election Day. But are camps developing pro and con on the Environmental Bond Act? Because everybody who goes to the polls in New York State, is going to have an option, you know, the opportunity to weigh in on this.
Yeah, everybody should be doing their research and ready to vote on this Proposition 1. In New York City, there'll be several other ballot questions related to racial justice, but in the state, this is the big one. So there is a very large coalition that's come together to support it, and they've started to spend some money on that. I have not found any organized effort against it. I haven't looked completely thoroughly, but I did a little looking around previously, and then again, right, you know, in preparation for this segment, and I haven't found a large opposition. So I don't think there's going to be a big push against, unless there are conservatives who want to try to rally against it. I think Zeldin's silence on the measure is telling. And I think at a $4.2 billion environmental bond act, this is not something that is going to stir up a lot of negative resentment here. And a recent Siena poll showed that New York voters support it by a pretty wide margin, at least initially. But of course, that's weeks before Election Day.
And I looked last night and this morning, and I couldn't find a Zeldin position either way. You indicated before you couldn't either. So as far as we know, the Republican candidate for governor has not taken a position pro or con ballot question number one statewide this fall.
Correct. As far as I know, there's a chance at a press conference here or there he's been asked, and it just didn't make a lot of news. I'm going to continue looking. I tried to get clarity from the campaign, as I said, leading up to this discussion, but none was forthcoming. So as far as I know, he hasn't taken a position yet, but I'm happy to be corrected on that one way or another.
Susan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Well, I was just wondering about the public powered utilities. Has Hochul made any gestures towards starting to rewire New York State for the electric cars?
Oh, for electric cars. So you're talking about charging stations, Susan?
Yes, charging stations, etc.
Yeah. Well, that will take a whole big infrastructure ban. It will, right? If they're really going to ban the sale of gasoline-powered cars, that is new gasoline-powered cars, people could still keep and resell the ones they have after 2035, definitely will require an infrastructure.
Yes. So Governor Hochul has continued a lot that was in motion under Governor Cuomo, but expanded a variety of measures related to climate and climate action and renewable energy and some of the things that I mentioned earlier. And there are too many projects to list going on, and she's advanced a lot of them. But so many of the questions here, and these are questions that Lee Zeldin is raising and others are raising, is about the speed. Some on the left want them to go faster. Some on the right say that New York is not going to be prepared. And one of the big questions is this question about charging stations and battery storage and the ability for transmission lines to be in place that are needed as the state pulls back on greenhouse gas emissions. So the governor has moved forward a couple of very big transmission line projects coming from Canada or upstate New York. They're moving ahead on, I believe it's more than $1 billion in electrical vehicle infrastructure over the next several years. You know, there's a lot that's in motion, but it all has to sometimes, you know, be contracted out. Sometimes it has to win local approval of sitings. You know, there's a lot of questions about implementation here that if she wins this election, Governor Hochul will have to move forward. And if Zeldin wins, there's a lot of questions about the future of all of these projects and policies.
And here's a caller who's skeptical of this no new gasoline-powered car sales after 2035 policy of Hochul's. Karina in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Karina.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, definitely. The gasoline cars, yes, they do emit emissions. Yes, you can't understate that. But, you know, the batteries, where they're sourced from, you know, it's a very dangerous lithium ion. And, you know, if people are going to charge it hooked up to their home or building, you know, we have fire safety. Our grid is not up to par. I doubt our grid will be up to par in 13 years. We've been talking over a decade about getting solar on New York City, the top of New York City roofs, and we still haven't gotten it done. So I doubt it's going to be done in 13 years. And they're very costly. An F-150, for example, costs close to $100,000, a hybrid. not a hybrid, a battery power one. Tesla cars are still very expensive. So this is really going to really kick people out of certain income streams that don't have the means to buy these expensive vehicles. And I doubt they're going to go down in price because they're probably going to increase the cost because more people are going to buy them. So this is just going to make it very unequal for the lower, for people who don't have the means and need to maybe have a car because they have to drive a family member to the hospital, to medical services, or they need it for their job. And also, too, in terms of gas powered vehicles, that they'll still be able to buy and sell on the market. You know, the DMV has made it very difficult for existing vehicles to even stay on the road. Like my mom's G6 in 2020 couldn't pass the inspection and the car was not even 20 years old. Hmm. So we ended up having to get a new vehicle, a new car. But, you know, who's not to say that in 13 years, a lot of the cars on the road, will they be able to still drive? Because New York has made it difficult for cars that are over 20 years old to even still be on the road.
Karina, thank you so much. Thank you very much for your call. Well, the affordability of electric vehicles certainly is an issue, Ben, and they may come down. She said they may go up in price because if everybody's required to buy them in the future when they buy new cars, you know, then there'll be a kind of a monopoly in that respect and you can raise the price. I've heard the opposite speculation, which is that as they sell so many more of them, like a lot of electronics and other consumer products, the cost will go down as they get more mass produced. Who knows? But does Hochul talk about any subsidy for lower income people, working class New Yorkers who really probably can't afford the electric, the EVs that are on the market right now? By the time you get to 2035, is that part of the plan?
I haven't seen anything from the state on that. I could have missed it. I don't think there's anything coming from the state. I think there's questions about the role the federal government might play in in spurring purchase of electric vehicles. I think, to your point, the economics of the discussion there might be a little off from the caller in terms of what prices might do when there's much more competition in this sphere for sales of electric vehicles. But of course, we're also talking about over the course of a decade here or so. So I did want to mention also on the transportation front, Governor Hochul has moved forward this push to electrify all of the school buses in the state, which is another interesting, you know, part of this and relates a lot to the larger picture of greenhouse gas emissions, but then very much just sort of a very local air quality condition. So that's another one that's, you know, her campaign is touting. I don't know that Lee Zeldin opposes that one. That might be a difficult one to oppose.
Well, there are more specifics we could talk about if we had more time, but we've touched on a number of aspects of climate change prevention or adaptation in the governor's race in New York State, and that is issue 9 in 30 issues in 30 days, climate as an issue in the New York State governor's race. Tomorrow we'll do issue 10. We'll stay on climate, but we'll talk about climate as an issue in the races for Congress and what Democrats and Republicans say they would do nationally if they control the House and or the Senate. Ben Max is executive editor of Gotham Gazette and host of the Max Politics podcast. Ben, thanks.
My pleasure. Thank you.